later adopting the name Malmö Interplanetariska Sällskap, MIS, Malmö Interplanetary Society, today the oldest still active UFO society in Sweden. Parthenon published several of the classic contactees of the 1950s, George Adamski, Daniel Fry, Ray and Rex Stanford, Elizabeth Clara. These books had a strong influence on Swedish ufology in the 1950s and 60s. The second UFO society formed in 1958 was Stockholm-based Ifologiska Sällskapet, the Ifological Society. IFO should here be interpreted as interplanetary flying objects. In 1951 AD a theosophist Mr. Erik Jan Hummer founded an independent society Mandagsgruppen, the Monday Group, inviting speakers not only from the Theosophical Society but from various New Age and spiritual groups. In March 1958 Mrs. Kirsten Bafvestet was invited for a lecture on flying saucers. Mrs. Bafvestet had a deep interest in UFOs, paranormal phenomena, theosophy and alternative healing methods. She was the Swedish Regional Director of Borderland Sciences Research Foundation, BSRF, in California and a good friend of Riley Crabb, Trevor James Constable and Dr. Ruth Drown. Her lecture was a huge success and she was invited once again the next week to lecture on flying saucers. This time a suggestion was made to form a IFO society in Stockholm and members of the audience were invited to a formal meeting on March 23, 1958 and now the Ifological Society was founded. The first generation members were mostly theosophists, anthroposophists and spiritualists. Sweden had to wait until 1966 when representatives of a more critical and scientifically based ufology appeared with a book by Mr. K. Gosteren, De Flygen Tefaten. Document Doctory, The Flying Saucers. Documents and Theory. Ren was Swedish Regional Director of Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, APRO, and his first and subsequent books inspired the formation of the more scientifically oriented UFO societies in the 1970s. UFO, Sweden was one of these organizations founded in 1970. With the founding of UFO, Swedish ufology entered a new era with field investigations and a more critical view of the New Age and contactee-oriented ufology. Still many UFO, Sweden members were inspired by and active in theosophical groups. A frequent lecturer at meetings and annual conferences were Mr. Jan Fjellander, son of liberal Catholic bishop and well-known theosophist Siegfried Fjellander. Very active in UFO, Sweden during the 1970s and 80s were theosophically oriented UFO contactee Mr. Sten Lindgren. It was of course only natural that theosophists should become interested in ufology. There are many connections and similarities between the phenomena and paranormal contacts described in classical theosophy and the early UFO contact movement. Very few ufologists have entered this field of study, but I hope our colleagues around the world will discover this interesting area of research. And I also welcome active theosophists with a scholarly disposition to join in this venture. 2. Academic Esotericism. Esotericism, Ufology and the Academy. As a young student in the mid-1970s I studied history of religions and philosophy at the University of Stockholm. Already an active ufologist, AFU was founded in 1973 and an avid reader of esoterica I entertained plans for an academic career researching new religious movements. Somewhat to my surprise I was made aware of that this was not an area of inquiry endorsed by the institution. Rather it was shunned and obviously regarded as a non-legitimate field of study. I finished a short thesis on the Kabbalah and tried academic philosophy instead but found it rather boring and entered the Swedish School of Information and Library Science. I have never regretted this choice as you may have guessed from the wonderful quote at the top of my blog. Perhaps I was 25 years ahead of my time because during the last decades a minor cultural revolution has occurred in the academic world. Today there is no problem studying new religious movements and what is even more surprising, Esotericism has entered the academy as a legitimate field of study. There are now three universities for the interested student to choose between: Sorbonne, Amsterdam and Exeter, United Kingdom. An excellent introduction to what is now labeled Western esotericism and how this earlier taboo discipline found its way into the universities is Esotericism and the Academy by Wouter J. Hayengrouff, Professor of History of Hermetic Philosophy and Related Currents at the University of Amsterdam. A companion volume is Hermes in the Academy, edited by Wouter J. Hayengrouff and Joyce Pichnenberg. In his introduction to esotericism and the Academy, Hayengrouff gives some interesting glimpses of his problems, as a young university student, to learn more of the then taboo subject of esotericism. I was intrigued and wanted to learn more, so I asked my professors for advice. And that is when I began having my first experiences with a phenomenon that has ultimately led me to write this book. My interest in this domain seemed to make my teachers uncomfortable, and to my repeated requests for information and suggestions, they responded by tossing the embarrassing topic onto another colleague as if it were a hot potato. Nobody seemed willing to touch it. A few decades ago, the academic climate made it almost impossible to study esotericism, even in a historical and neutral way. Thanks to pioneers like Wouter J. Hayengrouff, the situation has begun to improve. In his article Some Remarks on the Study of Western Esotericism, Hayengrouff relates the problem of even mentioning the word esotericism in academic discussions. One may find that some excellent specialists hesitate or flatly refuse to participate, simply because being associated with esotericism. Although academic esoteric research is neutral and does not address the ontological issue, the question of truth, Hayengrouff displays a very open attitude to the possibility of new knowledge. All that I do know is the prime directive that should guide scholarly research and intellectual exploration, not to hold on what we already know well enough, allowing it to dominate the whole of our vision and thought, but being ready to discard our prejudices and revise our preconceptions in the light of new knowledge. As a ufologist and investigator of paranormal phenomena, I address esotericism in a somewhat different way, asking questions that even academic scholars do not touch. I have often pointed out that theosophy is contactee experiences minus spacecraft. That is, many of the original proponents of the esoteric tradition claimed both physical and psychic contact with aliens, often named brothers or adepts. Check this list on such experiences. Compare this list with classic UFO contactee reports, investigated by ufologists. This way of looking at esotericism changes the perspective and opens up new possibilities of evaluating the very difficult ontological issue, or in everyday language, the truth or reality behind the claims. But this kind of research, as well as UFO field investigation, would never be possible within an academic framework. Any university scholar suggesting such an inquiry would be flogged by his colleagues and would meet with a crescendo of criticism from the organized skeptics howling irrationalism, pseudoscience, anti-modernism. Just look at the problems for academic research in parapsychology. This reminds me of a favorite quote from Robert A. Heinlein's fascinating novel Lost Legacy, printed in Assignment in Eternity Volume 2. Any suggestion that there might be something to consciousness that can't be explained in terms of physiology and mechanics is as welcome as a Saint Bernard in a telephone booth. My proposition for inquiry is what I iconoclastically use to call real research. Simply because it tries to answer the basic question we all want to know: what is the truth? But as this type of research is not possible within today's universities, the only other option is creating privately funded archives and research institutions like IFU. And also gather a group of open-minded, non-conformist scholars in a new invisible college, like the one created by Alan Hayek and Jacques Vallée in the 1960s. This work is a real intellectual challenge. Paranormal phenomena and the academic scholar. During my 40-plus years of investigation and study of UFO and paranormal phenomena, I have talked to many kinds of witnesses, with a wide variety in profession and education. One of the most regular comments after an interview has been, "Don't mention my name." That so many witnesses to UFO and paranormal phenomena prefer anonymity is a problem in research, as the credibility factor is reduced, especially when witnesses only wish to talk to one investigator. I have been in this situation many times and lamented it. But witness integrity is very important. There is a social stigma in mentioning experiences and encounters that mainstream science regard as impossible or mythic. I well remember the words of a Swedish woman who went public with her UFO close encounter: "If I had known the public reaction to our observation, I would never have talked to the media." This is probably the prime reason why so few academic scholars go public when encountering unusual phenomena. To mention telepathy or intuition may be acceptable in academic circles, but if you recount materializations, levitations, UFO close encounters or observations of little people, fairies, leprechauns, you are usually in for trouble. This is probably why active scientists and academic scholars loathe to disclose their personal experiences. It could also be the end of their academic career or work if the organized skeptics center a campaign against this irrational pseudo-scientist who has entered the domain of forbidden science. "Science is the pursuit of the unknown," wrote biologist and 40-year researcher Ivan T. Sanderson. Or at least it should be. An interesting effort that may somewhat remedy this situation is a website called The Park Collection by Marcus Heyman. It is a collection of documented reports and statements from well-known scientists and academics who have publicly told of their observation of phenomena like materialization and levitation. Marcus Heyman gives this interesting explanation for his project: "I brought this collection into life because once I was even an involuntary witness of a floating object. A table had risen, remained in the air and fell slowly to the floor again, as if it was held by invisible hands. You can probably imagine that such an experience is not pleasant. One believes to have went mad and is afraid. Fortunately, there were other observers present with the same horrified look. That helped to reassure me, because I have never heard of sudden onset group insanity. For the particularly clever of you, no, it was not a magic show. So I went on a search for other witnesses of these types experiences. That's called psychokinetic phenomena, park phenomena. It seemed that there are many, but only a few had the courage to describe what they witnessed, choosing their real name. Most people use a synonym. For me, it's interesting to get a confirmation from someone who had an academic background and is willing to use their real name. That's why I went looking for academics who had seen something like this. I was amazed when I discovered that well-known scientists and Nobel Prize laureates had witnessed such events and written about it. That was the beginning of the collection. Maybe we are now witnessing a more open attitude to paranormal phenomena among leading scientists." American science journalist John Horgan, in his book Rational Mysticism, 2003, noted the increased academic interest in the interface between science, mysticism and religion. Horgan used the term rational mysticism in his article in Scientific American, July 2012, with the provocative title "Brilliant Scientists Are Open-Minded About Paranormal Stuff, So Why Are Not You?" He concludes, "The discovery of telepathy or telekinesis would blow centuries of accumulated scientific dogma sky high. What could be more thrilling? Another scientist who challenges the materialist and reductionist worldview is Dr. Jeffrey J. Gripel, professor of religious studies at Rice University, Houston, Texas. From an esoteric viewpoint, one of the most audacious theories regarding 19th century paranormal phenomena formulated by an academic scholar is the hidden hand theory, presented by theosophical scholar Dr. Jocelyn Godwin, Colgate University, New York. In a 4-series of articles, The Hidden Hand, 1990, 1991, in the academic journal Theosophical History, Godwin presents impressive documentation indicating that a secret society created the first wave of very physical materialization phenomena in the United States. The suggestion is that the Hydesville phenomena were not a spontaneous manifestation, but something provoked by living persons, acting with no lesser intent than that of changing the worldview of Western civilization. Theosophical History, Volume 3-2, April 1990, p. 38. Jocelyn Godwin is very much aware of the problem of presenting such a theory as an academic scholar. In a position statement he states, "My own mind is open to the possibility of events for which materialistic science, and the historical scholarship modeled on it, has no place. Consequently, I do not automatically dismiss the idea of immaterial influences, such as were suggested by many writers on the Hydesville incident. I would suggest that there was another hiero-historical event in the early 1870s, another move to affect public opinion, mainly by working from within the spiritualist movement." Theosophical History, Volume 3-3, July 1990, p. 72-73. This is also the view of history as given in the esoteric tradition and mentioned by writers such as Charles Leadbeater, Constance Watchmister, Annie Besant, Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence. In his book The Astral Plane, 1898, Charles Leadbeater mentioned a secret lodge he personally knew, the Yucatan Brotherhood. The chiefs of this lodge, though they have always kept themselves and their society strictly in the background, have nevertheless done what they could from time to time to assist the progress of truth in the world. Nearly a century ago, in despair at the rampant materialism which seemed to be stifling all spirituality in Europe and America, they determined to make an attempt to combat it by somewhat novel methods, in point of fact to offer opportunities by which any reasonable man could acquire absolute proof of that life apart from the physical body which it was the tendency of science to deny. The phenomena exhibited were not in themselves absolutely new, since in some form or other we may hear of them all through history, but their definite organization, their production as it were to order, these were features distinctly new to the modern world. Their movement which they thus set on foot gradually grew into the vast fabric of modern spiritualism, and though it would perhaps be unfair to hold the originators of the scheme directly responsible for many of the results which have followed, we must admit that they have achieved their purpose to the extent of converting vast numbers of people from a belief in nothing in particular to a firm faith in at any rate some kind of future life. This is undoubtedly a magnificent result, though there are those who think that it has been attained at too great a cost. In esotericism, this secret lodge is regarded as a subsidiary branch of the planetary hierarchy, the planetary guardians, custodians of the science of the multiverse. This is the branch or department of this global organization especially concerned with the development of science. Alice Bailey mentioned their work in Esoteric Psychology I. The rise of modern spiritualism is no doubt due to the seventh sub-influence, and it may also be a foreshadowing of the great seventh ray still to come. It is interesting to note that this movement was started by a secret society which has existed in the world since the last period of seventh ray dominance in Atlantean times. 166, 167, Cloth Bound Dead. There is an interesting Swedish connection to the Yucatan Brotherhood. Swedish esotericist Henry T. Lawrence mentioned in a letter to a friend that he was acquainted with a Norwegian man who was a member of this secret lodge. This man traveled around the world in the 1920s visiting various spiritualist groups, but was not impressed by their activities. Letter April 12, 1964. According to my understanding, Henry T. Lawrence worked together with, or was inspired by, a member of the Planetary Guardians who is referred to as Hilarion, responsible for the branch of adepts involved with concrete knowledge and scientific development. Regarding his work, we find this reference by Alice Bailey. He, Hilarion, HB, controls and transmutes the great movements that tend to strip the veil from the unseen. His is the energy which, through his disciples, is stimulating the psychical research groups everywhere, and he it was who initiated, through various pupils of his, the spiritualistic movement. Initiation, Human and Solar, p. 59. Experiencing a UFO close encounter or a very concrete and physical paranormal phenomenon can be traumatic or inspiring, whether you are an academic scholar or ordinary citizen. People all over the world are changed by these experiences, so the impact on our culture is deep and lasting. As a ufologist, I can only sympathize with the education by astonishment agenda of the Yucatan Brotherhood. Perhaps they also use the UFO phenomenon in this way? On September 1, 1984, I interviewed Peggy Robert, who had a close encounter with a UFO that became a turning point in her life. Before this incident, she was a typical ego, trippy materialist. During the interview, she tried to explain her new life after the UFO encounter. "Now I knew there was something else in other dimensions, life that is different and more evolved. After this contact with the UFO, I couldn't accept Christianity as presented in the churches. Now I started an intensive period of searching." Peggy Robert later studied alternative medicine, reflexology, acupressure and nutrition. The rest of her life she dedicated to helping people with psychological and physical healing, working at various health resorts. Peggy Robert, if we imagine that members of the Yucatan Brotherhood initiated the UFO incident, I guess they could say, mission accomplished. Esotericism and intellectual integrity. As a young student of philosophy and history of religions at Stockholm University in the 1970s, one of the basic philosophical problems occupying my inquisitive mind was the intellectual and epistemological difficulty in accepting the reality of a multiverse in the esoteric sense. In my diary from January 8, 1976, I wrote, "My thinking is now very much occupied with the problem whether it is consistent with intellectual integrity to accept a worldview that cannot be verified by empirical science. If this is possible, then esotericism can be philosophically established and motivated." Up until 1975, I was very much influenced by the writings of Rudolf Steiner on these issues. His ideas regarding a spiritual science that could be verified by special training appealed to my own theories. But in December 1975, I read Kunskapen om The Knowledge of Reality, by the eminent and erudite Swedish esotericist Henry T. Lorenzi. His penetrating criticism of Steiner's anthroposophy became a watershed and an eye opener in my own thinking, which resulted in a comment in my diary for December 2, 1975. "By studying Lorenzi, Bailey and other authors, I have found that Lorenzi's criticism of Steiner is tenable. I didn't expect that my view on Steiner could be so radically modified and altered." It was, of course, not only Lorenzi's criticism of Steiner that I found convincing, but above all his brilliant, scholarly treatment and presentation of the esoteric tradition. Henry T. Lorenzi was educated at Uppsala University, where his teachers in philosophy were the famous Swedish philosophers Axel Hagerström and Karl Hedvall. With this background and most assuredly inspiration from one of the planetary adepts, he was able to formulate the esoteric worldview in such a clear and scientific language, with a new terminology, that his books can appeal to scholars and humanist intellectuals. His presentation of esoteric philosophy is in an international perspective of a quality unsurpassed. My personal view is that Lorenzi is the disciple of rare capability in Sweden. Referred to by Alice Bailey in A Treatise on White Magic. As an academic philosopher, Lorenzi especially addressed the basic scientific, ontological and epistemological issues and problems confronting students of esotericism. He often pointed out that the only scientifically and intellectually tenable attitude to the esoteric worldview is to regard it as a working hypothesis. To scientists without experience of other worlds than a physical, hylozoic scan, of course, be only a working hypothesis. Incidentally, this is also the position recommended by the Tibetan, D.K., in the books written by Alice Bailey. "Our attitude should be that of reasonably inquiry, and our interest that of the investigating philosopher, willing to accept a hypothesis on the basis of its possibility. Those open-minded investigators who are willing to accept its fundamentals as a working hypothesis until these are demonstrated to be erroneous, they will be frankly agnostic." In the books by Lorenzi and Bailey, we are constantly reminded to refrain from simple belief when it comes to facts presented by the planetary guardians. Not to make a new dogmatic sect based on the data given, but keeping an open mind and using the information as a working hypothesis. "Belief is the enemy," wrote Fortean journalist John A. Keel. With this attitude, the critical and scientific scholars can accept the esoteric worldview and still keep their intellectual integrity. Regarding intellectual integrity, I found a good definition on the website of the critical thinking community, valuable intellectual traits, intellectual integrity, recognition of the need to be true to one's own thinking, to be consistent in the intellectual standards one applies, to hold one's self to the same rigorous standards of evidence and proof to which one holds one's antagonists, to practice what one advocates for others, and to honestly admit discrepancies and inconsistencies in one's own thought and action. How come then that so few non-conformist academic scholars and intellectuals have discovered the writings by Henry T. Lawrence? The first and the most obvious answer is that his books have only been available in English during the last decades. But the most relevant reason is that there are very few scholars that dare to enter the domain of forbidden science, in the words of Jacques Vallée. To leave the safe world of materialist, reductionist science is to become a cultural heretic. And coming out as an esotericist takes intellectual courage, especially if you are working in the academic community. You will be accused of harboring dangerous irrational ideas and conspiracy theories. A promising sign of the times, though, is that Western esotericism can now be studied at several universities. Western esotericism is a somewhat inadequate name, as the esoteric tradition is global and planetary. Academic students of Western esotericism are often referring to the French scholar Antoine Favre when it comes to a definition of esotericism, consisting of six fundamental characteristics or components. To esotericists of the Bailey, Lawrence school, the definition is simple: the knowledge of reality in custody of and presented by the planetary guardians. These adepts I have somewhat irreverently referred to as the Higher Intelligence Agency, here. Theosophist Henry Steele Lockett, who knew several of them personally, often called them the boys. A very good definition of intellectual courage is also presented on the critical thinking community: intellectual courage, having a consciousness of the need to face and fairly address ideas, beliefs or viewpoints toward which we have strong negative emotions and to which we have not given a serious hearing. This courage is connected with the recognition that ideas considered dangerous or absurd are sometimes rationally justified, in whole or in, and that conclusions and beliefs inculcated in us are sometimes false or misleading. To determine for ourselves which, we must not passively and uncritically accept what we have learned. Intellectual courage comes into play here, because inevitably we will come to see some truth in some ideas considered dangerous and absurd, and distortion or falsity in some ideas strongly held in our social group. We need courage to be true to our own thinking in such circumstances. The penalties for non-conformity can be severe. To accept the esoteric worldview as a paradigm and working hypothesis, most scholars would probably need some form of empirical data indicating a multiverse. For me, the empirical evidence became obvious by investigating UFO and paranormal phenomena. But of course, a bridge to esotericism could be found by researching a number of borderland phenomena: healing, out-of-body experiences, remote viewing, materializations, etc. Neither reductionist materialism nor orthodox religion has any tenable answers when faced with UFO and paranormal phenomena which clearly indicate a multiverse reality. If there is a multiverse inhabited by various sentient beings of different evolution and intelligence, there must also be a science of the multiverse, which implies that it is reasonable to assume the existence of scientists of the multiverse or custodians of knowledge not discovered by mainstream science. This is the position maintained by the esoteric tradition or the ancient wisdom. For the scholar studying esotericism, this advice by Henry T. Lawrence should be remembered to keep a psychological balance and intellectual integrity, even if by thorough study you are, however, much convinced that the hylozoic system agrees with reality, yet you must view it as a working hypothesis. This principled attitude is necessary to avoid all manifestations of dogmatism, fanaticism, and intolerance. Henry T. Lawrence, Knowledge of Life 4. 1995, online ed. p. 29, 30. humanism, skepticism, esotericism. After many years of field investigation and